the children come. Don't dare drive them away. And then the kingdom comes. Hear the holy, foolish things they say. The springtime of their life decides the adults they'll become. So let the children come. Please let the children come.
Welcome to Children's Bible Journey, with stories and songs just for kids. We have a dramatized Bible story coming up, but let's get today's program started by singing praises to our awesome God.
Let's pretend now. Let's pretend we're quiet animals. We can tiptoe around in a circle.
Keep you strong. We want you to an awesome way to praise the Lord.
We'll do some more singing in a few minutes. Now let's get back to our continuing Bible story from the Bible in Living Sound.
Today, sir, you are to be tried before Nero.
After more than 2 years, that for which I was brought to Rome is to take place.
But Paul, sir, you can expect no justice whatsoever from Nero. To achieve his crown, he poisoned his stepbrother. He murdered his own mother, also his former wife. The details of the vice and iniquity practiced in this court are too degrading and horrible for description. Your condemnation before such a judge is certain.
From a human point of view, yes. But as long as I remain loyal to God, I have nothing to fear. God's will shall prevail.
Well, the evidence is in. Now it remains only for Nero to make his decision. And we can expect no mercy from him. The decree will be guilty. The sentence, death.
Quiet! Quiet! His Majesty Nero, Emperor of all the civilized world, has made a decision of justice. Hear ye!
I have heard the charges against the prisoner and the evidence. The evidence does not sustain the charges. I, Nero, find the prisoner guiltless. Remove the prisoner's bonds. He is a free man. That cheering right after the trial. Who was it and why?
My dear Nero, those were Christians cheering for their champion whom you let go free to influence more people to become Christians and your enemies.
My enemies? Is that what Christians are?
You should have found him guilty and worthy of death.
I shall, if I ever get another opportunity. And I will.
God does take care of his own.
Yes. Contrary to the general expectations, Nero found you guiltless. In so doing, he unknowingly obeyed the will of God.
Oh, freedom, at last.
Well, let's shake the dust of Rome from our feet while we still can.
Yes, yes, yes. Come.
Looks like half of Rome is afire. You know, I like fires. Oh, but I'm glad the palace is safe. Yes?
It is your personal servant, Your Majesty.
Oh, and,
Rome is burning, Your Majesty.
Yes, a great fire. I'm watching it through the window.
At least half of Rome will be in ruins, Your Majesty.
Well, what of it? I'll merely tax the people heavier and rebuild Rome. Oh, who started the fire? I'll reward him.
Ugly rumors are rampant, sire.
Rumors about what?
The fire, Your Majesty.
Who started it?
I'd rather not say, Your Majesty.
Answer me. That's a command. Who started the fire?
His Majesty.
His Majesty? Who is... You mean me? I started the fire?
That is what the rumor is saying, Your Majesty.
Well, who started the rumor? The lion shall feast on him.
All Rome is saying it, Your Majesty.
Rumors are never true. I did not start the fire. But I shall find out who did. But, my dear wife and queen, there is no defense against the rumors of great masses of people. Mobs are uncontrollable.
My darling Nero, there just might be an effective defense.
Kill everyone?
No, my Nero. Anger will never do it. But just the opposite might.
Elucidate.
The people directly affected by the fire will be homeless, angry, without food, in immediate need of help and sympathy. Well, give it to them. Feed them. Sympathize with them. Make a pretense of great generosity. Not only will this avert suspicion from you, but it may even make you their hero.
Oh, a faultless plan, except for one thing. If I convince them I did not start the fire, I must also convince them who did. And I don't know.
I do.
You do? Who started the fire?
The Christians.
You're sure of this?
No, need I be? We have only to convince the people.
Oh, you're an intelligent woman. You are also an Israelite proselyte. Your scheming has all the earmarks of murderous designs against the Christians.
There are far too many Christians. Death of the Christians in mass would be welcomed by the people as just punishment of the plotters against Rome. Revenge against the arsonists.
It shall be done exactly as you outlined. Exactly.
His Highness is correct. The people of Rome welcome the persecution of the Christians. The Christians have been unable to prove that they did not start the fire. Paul is considered one of the principal leaders of the Christians. The blame of the fire can be placed directly upon him. Thus he will surely be doomed to death. I shall hurry to Rome and personally direct this campaign.
Captain, that Christian leader, Paul, is directly responsible for the Great Fire. Send your soldiers out. Find Paul, arrest him, place him in my darkest dungeon.
Yes. How does my beloved Paul feel this morning?
I'm grateful of your company and help, Luke, my son. Yet, I am lonely. I long for love and sympathy.
The desire for love and sympathy is implanted in the heart by God himself.
I am sure of it. Even Jesus, in his hour of agony in Gethsemane, longed for the sympathy of his disciples. Through the long years of my hardships and suffering, I tried to ignore my inner yearning for understanding and companionship, yet it was there. It is still there. Your presence, my son, Luke, and the visits of Onesiphorus bring gladness and cheer to me as I await the wrath of Nero and the thought of the resurrection and being forever with God and his loving, wonderful Son, Jesus, my Savior, sustains me.
Continue the Bible story tomorrow. And if you would like to have these stories to listen to at home, you can call the Bible in Living Sound at 1-800-634-0234. That's 1-800-634-0234. Now here's some more music before we have to say goodbye.
Bye. Well, hi, Hannah.
Why are you sitting here in an empty church?
Oh, I love to listen to Mrs. Peterson practice the organ. So soothing. And what are you doing here on a warm Wednesday afternoon?
I wanted to ask you a question about last week's sermon.
Okay.
You said that prayer is really important, right?
Right.
Well, if God knows everything about us and knows exactly what we need, why do we need to pray?
Wow, Hannah, I am proud of you. You really listened to my sermon. I'll bet you're thinking about the text I read in Matthew that says that God sends rain on both the just and the unjust, those who love him and those who don't. The just pray, the unjust don't. But both receive the gift of rain.
So if God is going to do things for us anyway, why ask him for stuff? It would be like me saying to my mom, please give me breakfast. She's going to fix me breakfast whether I ask for it or not because she loves me.
Exactly. Your mom and God act out of love, and love doesn't require anything of the other person. So maybe asking God for things isn't how we should always pray. What do you do when your mom fixes you a delicious breakfast?
I say, hey, thanks, Mom. Great oatmeal.
And?
And that's what I should say to God. Thank you for your blessing.
Now you're on the right track, Hannah. Our prayers should reflect our gratitude for the many blessings God has given us, even when we don't ask for them. Sometimes we get so busy wishing for things we don't have that we forget to thank God for the many blessings we've already received.
The next time I pray, I'm going to do a lot more thanking and a lot less asking.
And I'm going to thank God for young people who actually listen in church. That's a real blessing.
This program was brought to you by the Children's Ministries Department of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
boys and girls. This is Ms. Kathy. I'm so happy you've joined me today for another story just for you. Chapter 8, Secret Places. Sammy couldn't wait to tell the others at school about the bathroom incident. Mr. Chambers knows there's a bathroom, but he doesn't want anyone else to know, Sammy said enthusiastically. How do you know that? Maria asked. Because he slipped and almost said the bathroom was off the kitchen. Then he caught himself and said the only bathroom was upstairs. Wow, Chris said. I wonder what he's hiding in there. That's what we've got to find out, Sammy said. I'm going to call Mrs. Shue after school and fill her in. I'll see if she knows any other reasons why people would need secret rooms in their houses. After school that afternoon, Sammy dialed Mrs. Shue's number. He told her about his discovery. Then he asked for advice. I have a book that may be of some help, Mrs. Shue answered. Why don't you and the rest of the Shoebox kids come over tomorrow after school and we'll see what we can find out. The next afternoon, all the Shoebox kids met at the Shue residence. While they were having another round of milk with Mrs. Shue's homemade cookies, Mrs. Shue brought a book to the table. Sammy almost choked when he saw it. That's the same book I got from the library, he exclaimed. It's all about secret rooms throughout history. I brought it home when I was working on my report about the Underground Railroad for school, but I haven't had time to read it yet. It does have a couple of chapters about hiding slaves, Mrs. Shue said, but what really interested me were the chapters about the early Christians who had to hide out. People hated them because they wanted to worship the one true God and not the many false gods of the Romans. So I bought the book a few years ago. I thought it might come in handy sometime, and now it has. Mrs. Shue turned to the table of contents. After scanning down the list of chapters, she turned to one. The kids looked at the title. It said, Christians in the Catacombs. Dee Dee wrinkled her face in confusion. What's that word? Cata what? Catacombs, Mrs. Shue repeated slowly. The last part is pronounced combs, like combs to fix your hair. Catacombs were caves or tunnels that existed under the city of Rome. During the early years of the Christian church, Christians came under attack by the Roman citizens for having different beliefs. If you were discovered to be a Christian, you would be severely punished, even killed. She turned a page. There was a drawing of a tunnel with people praying in it. Here we go, Mrs. Shue said. She began to read the caption under the picture. Christians met in secret tunnels in order to worship God without being caught and to escape capture by the Roman authorities who might be looking for them. So these were reasons a secret room was needed almost 2,000 years ago. I'm sure glad we don't have to hide to worship God today, Willie said. That would be awful, Maria agreed. Just think, Mrs. Shue said, we wouldn't be able to meet at the Shoebox. Pastor Hill couldn't preach a sermon, and you wouldn't be able to have family devotions at home. You could even be punished for saying grace before you eat your lunch. But what about other secret rooms, Sammy asked. He didn't see what Christians hiding in the catacombs had to do with Mr. Chambers' hidden bathroom. Mrs. Shue turned to another chapter. Anne Frank's Secret Attic was the title. Who's Anne Frank? Chris asked. Anne Frank, Mrs. Shue said, was a real Jewish girl who lived in the country of Holland in the early 1940s. World War II was being fought with Germany. The Germans thought they were better than everyone else. They especially didn't like the Jews, which is why Anne Frank and her family went into hiding. They hid in secret rooms in a friend's attic for many months before they were found. Then they were sent off to prison camps and eventually killed along with 6 million other Jews. Wow, Dee Dee said softly. That's terrible. But why didn't the Germans like them, Jenny asked. Did they do bad things? The only thing they did, Jenny, Mrs. Shue explained, was to worship differently. But that still doesn't explain Mr. Chambers' secret room, Sammy said. I understand these other reasons for needing secret rooms, but they don't have anything to do with Mill Valley. Mr. Chambers' house was built in the 1870s. Why would he need a secret room? Sammy, I'm really not sure, Mrs. Shue answered. Maybe he does some kind of weird experiments, Maria said. Like making a robot, Chris laughed. He got out of his chair and walked with his hand stretched in front of him. The others laughed. Maybe he robs people and hides the loot in the room, Dee Dee suggested. Yeah, Willie said. When the police come to search his house, they'd never be able to find anything. Pretty sneaky, huh? Maria agreed. Do you suppose he kidnapped someone once and kept him prisoner in there? Maybe he demanded ransom money. He'd be mean enough to do that, Sammy said. The rest of the Shoebox kids agreed. Then they got very quiet. They suddenly realized Mrs. Shue was staring at all of them with a very sad look on her face. I can't believe what I am hearing, she said slowly. After all our talk about being more like Jesus and how we think about others, how have you come up with these awful ideas about Mr. Chambers? The kids looked from one to the other. We've always heard older kids tell stories about him, Sammy said quietly. I guess we just went along without knowing whether any of it was true or not. I guess you did, Mrs. Shue said. I don't know much about Mr. Chambers, but I know he contributes quite a lot to various charities in town. Every year, a list of people who have given donations to the local soup kitchen and to the homeless shelter is printed in the paper. I always see Mr. Chambers' name on it. I have, too, Dee Dee agreed. I even heard Mom and Dad talking after one of their meetings at the shelter about how generous he is. I guess I just ignored what they said. I also remember Mr. Chambers writing a letter to the paper saying how ramps should be put in all over town to make it easier for handicapped people to get around, Mrs. Shue said. Willie, Jenny, and Sammy looked at each other. They knew this was probably true, too, as they remembered the ramp up to his porch. It seems to me, Mrs. Shue said, the evidence strongly suggests that Mr. Chambers is a wonderful, caring person. I guess he was pretty nice when we sold him the candy bar, Sammy said. Jenny and Willie nodded. Well then, Mrs. Shue said, I sure hope you have learned something today. It's too easy to believe untrue things about people, but we must keep ourselves from doing that. We should learn the truth about others instead of relying on what other people say. And Sammy, she continued as she turned to him, I can't say why there is a hidden room in Mr. Chambers' house, but I do know that many Chinese came to America in the 1800s. They were not liked at all. Perhaps your grandparents could give you some information on the Chinese during that time. It's entirely possible that, since they were so disliked, some of them had to hide out for their own safety.
The story you have heard today is a chapter of The Shoebox Kids, Book 9, The Secret of the Hidden Room, written by Nancy Speck, edited and created by Jerry D. Thomas, and used with permission from the Pacific Press Publishing Association. If you're interested in any other books published by the Seventh-day Adventist Church, please visit AdventistBookCenter.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
This podcast is a production of the Carolina Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Let the children come. Don't dare drive them away. And then the kingdom comes. Hear the holy, foolish things they say. The springtime of their life decides the adults they'll become. So let the children come. Please let the children come.
Children's Bible Journey was brought to you by 3ABN Australia Radio and is a production of Life Talk Radio at lifetalk.net.